But Moshe Rabbeinu began doing that one very, very almost sneaky thing that the father couldn't resist. Moshe Rabbeinu began crying. He began beseeching and pleading. And Hashem said, Oyvei, kaviyochel, I'm in trouble if it could be. Because if he doesn't stop, it's going to go against the Ratzon Hashem. Quickly, Malachi Yashar says, close up the Shari Tefillah. Quickly, stop it. Because his tefillah is like a sword that's cutting through Shemayim. And if he continues, I will not be able to prevent giving in. And as difficult as it is for us to comprehend it, that's what this Chazal is telling us. They're like a loving, giving father who cannot resist the pleas, the tears of his son. Hashem would have given in, even though it wasn't deserving, even though Mishpat said you can't, shouldn't have it, even though Hashem took a shvua not to give it. What can I do? He begged, he asked, I can't help. And it takes work. It takes work to relate to our Creator that way and to understand it. But I think if you look around your life, you'll see enough examples that are similar that you could use them and just multiply them by maybe 10,000, and you'll know and relate to Hashem. I remember when my son, Shalom Ari, was 2 years old, and he was in the high chair, and he wanted some candy or whatever it was, and I took it away from him. It wasn't good for him. His sister, Sarleh, who was in 4, said to him, Shams, psst, just cry, you'll get it. And she was right. She was coaching him. She was correct. If he cried enough, he would have gotten it. Because a cute 2-year-old, how can you say no, a lollipop, teeth, no teeth, come on, I can't resist. And when you see that, what you have to then do is say, wait a minute, that's a paternal instinct. What does that mean? I did not write the coding of my emotional fabric. I did not sit down and write, I will now have rachmanis on my child and code my heart to feel that. That's an instinct that Hashem put within the heart of the human to allow the human to properly bring up a child. But that is but a mere shadow of the true feeling, the true argasha that Hashem has to every one of His creations. And if you take that paternal instinct, which is exactly that, an instinct that I have no control over, and multiply it 10,000 times, you'll see but a glimpse of the magnitude of the mercy and love that Hashem has for us. And then you'll understand how it is that tefillah works. That when I stand in front of my Creator, I do not deserve this. I have no taina to this. I cannot say to Hashem, you have to give it to me or you owe it to me, because it's not coming to me. And I'm not coming on that track. I'm saying one simple thing. Tati, please. And if you say it with tears, it pulls kaviyachal on the heartstrings of Hashem, and you may not be worthy of it, you may not be deserving of it, but you may get it. I want to share with you something that a Rebbe of mine said to me many, many years ago. He said, say these words after each tefillah. Make sure after you make a strong request, if you're asking for a particular item, a particular situation, make sure after each request you say these words, if it's for the best. Because, my friends, it's amazing power, this power of tefillah. What tefillah can do sometimes is it can bring you something that may not be for your good. Because you kvetch and you kvetch and you ask and you ask, and finally Hashem says, okay, I can't resist anymore. Okay. And it may well not be in your best interest. The Chofetz Chaim, his wife had a miscarriage. And he said, oi, I kvetch too much. He was davening for a son. And apparently he was davening and crying, and he understood after this event that he wasn't supposed to have that son. But Hashem couldn't deny totally the requests of the Chofetz Chaim, so Hashem had to do something. And that's how the Chofetz Chaim interpreted what had happened. Something. And my friends, the power of tefillah is an amazing, amazing force. Okay, now, that being said, I have an interesting observation to make. If you ask the average fellow, ask a guy who went to yeshiva, been davening many years, a good solid citizen, to daven for the amud without a siddur. Once you get up there, daven shachris without a siddur, what do you think is going to happen?
I'm not going to daven for the amud. First of all, I'm tickle nervous daven for the amud. You want me to daven for the amud without a siddur? I can't do that.
Now, why can't the average person do that? Well, the answer is because, my goodness, I mean, who could know all the words of Shemoneh Esrei by heart? I mean, every word Shemoneh Esrei said flawlessly by heart? Can't do that. Now, gentlemen, let's imagine that this person is 23 years old. Let's assume from the time his bar mitzvah, when he came to some das, he's been davening every day. Hear good what I'm saying. If you daven Shemoneh Esrei three times a day over the course of 1 year, that's 1,000 Shemoneh Esreis minimum. Over the course of 10 years, it's 10,000 Shemoneh Esreis. Could you explain to me how it's possible that you've said words 10,000 times? 10,000 times, and you can't just rattle it out like it's nothing? That you can't say it with your eyes closed, half asleep? You hear the kasha? Now I'm being kind, because it's not just when a guy is at the Amud. Ask the average guy to say Psukkah Zimra by heart. Whew. Ask the average guy, even be a chidus privately, to say Shemoneh Esrei by heart. I'm afraid it doesn't happen. And you know, Pshat is, gentlemen, I'm afraid to say it's a very simple thing. Because if you don't know what the words mean, you're reading Greek. And Greek words you can say from now until doomsday, you will not remember it because it's and you can't possibly memorize those type of words. And I only really got to hear this when I was teaching halacha one day in a Muncie yeshiva, a very fine yeshiva with some of the best of the yeshiva bachrim, and I was teaching Hilchas Tefillah, and we started discussing something, and I realized, wait a minute, these guys don't know what the words mean. And I sort of did some informal sort of testing, and lo and behold, my theory was correct. Many solid citizens with good yeshiva educations do not know what many or most of the words of tefillah mean. Now, if you think to yourself, gee golly, I'm now a mature individual, I'm now taking on life in a serious way, isn't it about time that I start knowing what the words mean? And I believe one of the greatest and easiest techniques to develop in davening is to do a very simple thing. Take one perek, one part at a time, and just read the English translation, get comfortable with the words, and start saying it like you mean it. But not deep kavanas, not shem malchus, simple taich. Take one part of davening at a time, work on it until you know it, and take another part and another part. You're best off taking the first three brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. I had a friend in Beis Medrash who stopped eating bread during the week. During the weekday, he stopped eating bread. He said, listen, Shabbos, I have to wash, I have to bench, fine. But on weekdays, he stopped eating bread. And you know why? Because he got sick and tired of benching without kavana. So he stopped eating bread until he trained himself to say Birchas Hamazon like he meant and understood what the words meant. And I'm not advocating stopping davening until you know what the words mean, but I am very much advocating taking one part. Starting tomorrow morning, you take one part that you don't know what it means and just spend 3 minutes, 4 minutes. Then have the interlinear. Just look across, get the words until you got it, and then get the Hebrew words down until they flow, until you know it, and you'll find that it has a remarkable effect on your tefillah. But I think there's a second technique that a person needs to utilize if they really want to work on davening. And I'll share that with you. If you've ever noticed, good actors cry real tears when they're acting. And it's an amazing thing. If you watch a really good actor, it's so real, you could actually see the goosebumps on the guy's skin. And the tears are real. And when he's pretending that he's cold, he's not acting like he's cold. He is cold. And you see, it's real. It's real. You ever wonder how they do that? So I did wonder how they did it. And I found out. Most actors today use something called the Stanislavski system. What is the Stanislavski system? The method. There was a fellow who, in the early 1900s, recognized the fact that most actors look fake. So he devised a different methodology. Instead of acting the part, feel the part. Now that's clever, but how do you do it? So he said it's actually a simple thing.